Hello again, and thanks for tuning in to Digging for the Truth with Ark and Neo. This is episode number 18. This is our conclusion to Giants and Old Newspaper Stories. If you haven't listened to the first episode, you definitely want to check that out as well. After we recorded this podcast, Neo created a Facebook page called Old Newspaper Stories. And if you haven't joined already, definitely go and check out that site, that page, and join that group. Again, that's Old Newspaper Stories at Facebook. And we have just absolutely been overwhelmed and astounded at the amount of evidence and amount of stories that we found, not only in Giants, but all kinds of very, very unusual stories, not only just here in Oregon, but also all over the country, all over the world. And a lot of other people have joined in. Other researchers that have been doing this for years and years are absolutely amazed at some of the things we've found. I mean, this is a treasure trove that any one of us can tap into. We've gone in and looked for things like giant skeletons, giant bones, double rows of teeth, the pineal gland, red and blonde hair, all of these things which are attributes or common attributes cited to giants. Both in mythology and in the Bible and throughout history. So that's what we're kind of looking for, is what are the common universal themes that lend credence to these things being true. One of the very interesting things we found were things on the pineal gland, about feeding babies pineal glands to turn them into giant soldiers. Amazing things that I'd never heard before, where they were actually grinding up pineal glands of animals and then feeding them to other baby animals, and they would grow to twice the size within a matter of weeks, grinding these up human pineal glands and giving them to retarded children and old people, and seeing significant change in their disability. So this is something that has been going on for hundreds of years. You know, in another case of talking about the difference between blonde and brunettes being attributed to their pineal gland. And then yet another even more incredible story going back to the 1700s, talking about something called philosophical snuff, which was some sort of snuff which would allow them to leave their bodies and access the pineal glands of other humans, knowing instantly their thoughts and memories. So this is, like I said, back in the 1700s. So this actually goes back thousands and thousands of years. There's ancient Greek philosophers like Galen that we're first talking about, the pineal gland being the seat of the soul or the third eye. So this isn't some new thing. These are very ancient ideas. This has been just incredible, what we found in the overlapping evidence from different cultures and different sources and different times. So please join in if you haven't already. I think this research has just begun. So if you haven't gone and checked that out already, please definitely go and do that. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, go to destinylab.com, or you can email us directly at destinylab@gmail.com. And another thing I wanted to bring up was a Kent Hovind update. Our friends at God's Property Radio, Sam and Dan, have done some follow-up interviews with Ernie Land, who's been a friend of Kent Hovind and his family for many, many years, and kind of gave some really great insight as to the real agenda behind Kent's imprisonment. And they also have some upcoming interviews with some people that are going to be really interesting, so definitely check them out. And Sam and Dan as well also put together a website called freekent.com, and this will be like our go-to site for our music creation compilation CD for Kent and his ministry. It's going to be kind of a fundraising thing. And then we also have a couple t-shirt designs up there right now at freekent.com. So yeah, definitely go and check that out and help us demand some Hovindication. So stay tuned for new music by Destiny Lab, new music on this creation CD by Ninja Scroll, music by Keith Truth. So there's a lot of really talented people jumping on this, and more people contributing every day. So speaking of interviews, I recently just did an interview this last week on shamanism and ayahuasca and DMT. And we kind of dug into my research of what I found in some of our other discussions and shared that with him. We also are going to be doing a follow-up, digging even deeper into the pineal gland. Some of the things we discussed in the first interview tapped into this idea of these secret societies who have been eating pineal glands and secret rituals such as Skull and Bones' obscene rite, which is a supposed ritual in which they eat fresh human pineal glands. So do some research on this. I don't know what to think. It's crazy. I'm still, you know, discovering these things myself, but we're going to do some follow-ups on that as well. We're going to also do an interview with Justin at Fourth Watch Radio Network. Neo and myself are going to do an interview with him on old newspaper stories. Justin has a history and background as well, looking into old newspaper stories when he did a topic on Ouija boards. So we're just going to continue, as always, to ask questions that demand answers and dig for the truth. That's what we do. But without further ado, we're going to go ahead and get into the conclusion of our discussion. So here we go with Giants and Old Newspapers. Hope you enjoy. God bless.
Oh, yeah. But the ones that I like are the ones that give names. They give exact proportions and dates, and their stories from the time of the newspaper. You know, a lot of times like this list we just went through was from older accounts. Mm. But the ones we're going to get into now are basically from Oregon. And these are really interesting because I think a lot of these have probably never been reproduced in other newspapers. So this might be the first time even people that have done a lot of research on Giants may have heard of these. Mm. So the first one is just a small little snippet. And this is from, this is from the Oregon City Enterprise from February 28, 1878. And it talks about it says the Standard tells of the finding of the skeleton of a giant who is over 8 feet high in Lake County. Mr. Amos N. King, formerly of Portland, discovered it in a recess in the mountains of his ranch. And that's it. Just one little paragraph that talks about this guy naming him. You know, if you were named in the newspaper, people are going to come ask you about it. And, you know, obviously this guy believed that he found it and he recounted it.
Wow.
And this was published in the newspaper.
That's amazing.
You know, the next one was from the Morning Oregonian, May 16th, 1912. And this says, from all that is known of primitive man, he was no taller than his modern descendants of his skeleton, no more massive. Whatever else he may have done, may have been, he was not a giant. Facts of this sort lead one to suspect that the Ellensburg giant skeleton may be somewhat less ancient than its discoverers suppose. Its scientific value is doubtless immense, but it will not be likely to throw much light on the problems of evolution. So here's a story. I actually should have showed this earlier, but it's talking about that even at this time, they're already trying to place all these skeletons in a box of sorts so that it doesn't mess up the evolutionary theory.
Mm.
So because they're trying to late date the skeleton and not make it, they want the ancient man to be smaller, less brain power, weaker, because they want man to be getting bigger, better, smarter, even though we know that, even though all the evidence is against that, that the most ancient man was probably the most advanced and the smartest, the strongest. You know, that's what the evidence shows.
Wow.
So, you know, even way back then, I mean, that was 1912 when that story came out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just, you know, it keeps going on. And here's another one from March 18th, 1915. And this is talking about brains and stature. So, and it says, quarrymen in West Pennsylvania have lately dug up a pair of human skeletons, which some believe to be prehistoric. One of the skeletons is of a giant size, which may indicate that it belonged to the body of a man. The other one, much smaller, may, with the help of some imagination, be supposed to have belonged to his wife. It pleases the poetic fancy to picture the prehistoric man as huge in his proportions, while his spouse was little, meek, and clinging. But there is not an atom of evidence that such was the fact. It is quite as likely that the little skeleton belongs to the giant's son or nephew.
You know, we laugh at that, but it's not much different than some of these shows on on evolution, where they're like, show the whole family of some Neanderthal or some monkey, half man group, and talk about his family life and everyday emotional status and what he went through. And There's a couple of them I've watched that are just roll on the floor laughing.
Oh yeah,
to watch because the way they present it as like they just know all these things and all these details. It's just amazing.
Well, let me read the. This is from the same story. This is obviously a someone's. This is someone's view that was given that obviously believes in evolution. But this is what he said. Tradition represents our primitive ancestors as giants. Even the scriptures lend some support to such a theory. If it is true, we are obligated to infer that as the human race has decreased in stature, it has gained in mental power. I mean, prehistoric man may have been of great physical prowess, but he had not much intelligence. Brain power was evolved far more slowly than muscle power in our forefathers. So, I mean, he just made this up. I mean, there's no evidence for what he just said, but he has to believe it if he believes in evolution, you know, that, oh, it has to be that way. I mean, we're the smartest ones.
Yeah.
And it goes on. According to some theorists, our muscular strength and bodily structure are likely to go on diminishing for ages to come, while intelligence expands. They think they find evidence for their belief in the curious fact that short men are quicker witted and more energetic than tall ones. The big, flabby simpleton who has hardly energy enough to drag his huge carcass from one leaning post to another is familiar to all observers. I mean, talk about bias. This guy's really unbiased, isn't he?
Yeah.
Rarely do we see a short man thus lackadaisical or indolent. On the contrary, men of small stature usually overflow with energy. They're pugnacious, daring, and active. So I wonder if this guy was short. You think he was? He has small man syndrome.
Yeah, he's Napoleon.
Yeah, great. It keeps going. No general of the first rank has been of more than middle-sized. Frederick the Great was an inordinary fond of tall soldiers, but he himself was of middle height. Napoleon was short. Grant was not very tall. Not only does moderate size speak well for a man's energy and ability, but it often happens that the rule goes farther. It seems as if physical debility were the normal accompaniment of mental power. To prove such a theory, we might cite Spinoza, Herbert, Spencer, Newton, Pope, William III, Copper, Darwin, and hosts like them. As the brain waxes, the body wanes.
Yeah.
Perhaps someday we shall be all brain with nothing but a shell of bone to enclose and protect it. You know, talk about the ultimate small man rant, which is what this is. I mean, all the way back in 1915, some guy, was probably picked on. He was, I wish I knew who wrote this, but it's, is funny.
That's just so translucent of the mindset, you know, the wording has changed in modern times. They're able to maybe manipulate their wordplay a little bit more casual, but it's all the same, you know, it's this same ego driven, sort of like, self-indulgent type of ideas.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about was some things that are probably still around, and these are the mounds. A guy named Dr. Horner, he seemed to be the guy that really did a lot of research, and I think his name was J.H. Horner was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a professor at Oregon State University, and back then it was called Oregon Agricultural College, and a guy named J.B. Horner is who it is, and he took his class to see the historic mounds near Albany, Oregon, and basically what they've done is they've found relics of this Indian race that has been found by the professor. All kinds of different things have been found by him, and he took 70 students to this this Mounds on Wednesday, and it kind of talks about it in this story. And a lot of these are on a museum at the Dr. J.L. Hill Museum, and another guy named J.G. Crawford. And both these collections have many of the relics that have been found at this at these mounds. And I'd like to be able to figure out where these relics are at so I can maybe post some pictures, go visit them, because they've got to be close to where we're at.
Yeah, really.
But apparently they're in a between a town called Albany and Tangent. And in this article, he says they were erected before the pyramids of Egypt, is what Dr. J.B. Horner said. And he's been investigating these mounds for years, and he's made a huge study of the people that have built them. He says that the skeletons and the implements that have been found and taken from these different mounds, that there's been three different races that have built mounds in this vicinity, and they've all been in successive years. But anyway, there's supposed to be a big collection of these prehistoric relics at the J.G. Crawford Museum. And I don't know where this place is at. You know? So
that's weird.
Another one that I'd like to go, J.G. Crawford. And it's got to be near, and maybe it's at Oregon State in Corvallis now. I don't know. The other one that I'd like to investigate was a skeleton of another Indian giant that was found by a guy named James Wilkerson. And he was doing some excavation work for a guy named John Lowry. And he was going to make some bungalows for H.J. Bigger at Greenpoint. And they unearthed the skeleton of an Indian giant. And what they did is after they gathered up his bones, they discovered this was a giant Indian, supposedly between the Clackamas and the Malala Indian tribes. And this took place at the mouth of Abernathy. And that's where they found this body. And so I know exactly where that place is at. And apparently this skeleton was one of the warriors who's lost life in the battle, and he's buried with the other members of his tribe. But it was a giant that they don't give the size, but apparently was of great stature.
Wow.
So that's an interesting story. Now, the next one that's really interesting to me, because I know someone that I coach with, and he grew up in a town called Gladstone, and Gladstone was home to lots of Indians. It actually has one of the biggest falls on the Willamette River, where the Indians used to fish for salmon. And so they could just, catch salmon as they went up these falls. It was just a huge cliff fall area. And so there's thousands of Indians that inhabited this Gladstone area. And he's had some strange encounters, because apparently Gladstone was, that town was built on an Indian burial ground where thousands of Indians are buried. Kind of like, I think there was a show, Poltergeist. Was it Poltergeist about?
Yeah.
Totally. An Indian burial ground. This basically why. Yeah,
there's been a few like that, but yes, Poltergeist specifically, that was the storyline.
Yeah. So this, there's a whole story about, all these things that were built, and they just rolled right over them to build Gladstone. And and they did when they were building. They found a Clackamas Indian that was a giant. It says the men digging Thursday for the water plant found the skeleton of a giant. The man must have been more than 7 feet tall. And they found skeletons of men, women, and children. And all of them lay in the same plat, were Indians. They were just buried in this
ancient
area. In this area near Gladstone.
Man,
so
it's amazing. It's just like so many different accounts from different areas. You just wonder, have all these things been found? Why is there not very many recent accounts? I guess just because people aren't allowed to really dig much anymore. I know that I do a little bit of metal detecting, and we do some gold panning and dredging and whatnot. But with the rules and regulations that they've made, they've almost made it impossible to do any type of digging
or
actual excavation.
Yep. Oh yeah, I know. There's just There's all kinds of stuff. There's several other stories about giants, you know, from the 1700s and even 1500s. But, you know, I think I'll just skip into the other ones that are recent accounts instead of going back into these older ones, which, you know, are hard, you know, determine if they're accurate or not, unless they're eyewitness accounts. I think these ones are eyewitness accounts and not basically being told again and again. So here's one from October 3rd, 1907. They found a copper idol with the skeletons. And this is actually from a gravel pit in Chicago. It was a gravel pit from which the Chicago, Milwaukee, and St. Paul Railroad Company was trying to put a ballast, extend through, and when they were trying to do some work from western South Dakota to the Missouri River. So this is back in the Black Hills. And so that's kind of interesting that they found, an artifact, because copper, you know, to work with copper is a pretty interesting thing that they had metalworking as well.
Yeah, really.
And it says that he was at least 7 feet tall, and in close proximity, the skeleton were the giant's implements of copper and bone. So he not only had the
his weapons.
He had his weapons. He found each grave was near the giant were another grave, and that's where they discovered the copper idol, which is about 8 inches in length.
Wow.
So just keeps going on and on and on. And, you know, more skeletons in California. And here's another interesting one about the mounds. So this one actually gives pictures of the mounds. And this article ran in the Sunday Oregonian, November 12th, 1922. And it was written by J.B. Horner. He's got pictures of what the mounds look like. And he says originally they were pyramid shaped, but with the top cut off.
Weird.
So I don't know if you remember the back of the dollar bill, how it's got
exactly.
It's not the pointed pyramid, and some of the Aztec pyramids are actually flat on top as well.
It's got the capstone removed.
Yeah. Yep. The capstone. It says that this is what the burial mounds look like before they started to deteriorate. And
well, and that's what a lot of people have said. They've claimed, oh, where's the capstone of the pyramids in Egypt? And some people have said that it was meant to be like that. It's meant to be flat on top like that. And there's a lot of debate about what that, you know, whether it was solid gold capstone and all these other things. And so that's kind of interesting.
Now, this guy, I don't know where he got all his information, but I know he did interview Indian tribes at that time. But here's what he said. The fire worshipers, as declares Dr. Horner, believed in the immortality of the soul. As a sacred rite, they practiced the burial of their dead in order that their body might be preserved for a new existence. The Oregon fire worshipers evidently believed in the sacredness of fire, water, earth, and air. To pollute these was sinful. To leave the dead exposed was to defile the air. To place their dead in a stream or lake was to contaminate the water. To incinerate the dead was to defile the holy flame. And to bury the dead was to desecrate their mother, the earth. So they buried their dead in charcoal, which is an effective preservative.
Wow, yeah, that is interesting. They sound like ancient alchemists.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, how do they know this stuff? This is the dead were usually encased in a coat of clay about 2/3 of an inch in thickness, according to Dr. Horner. The clay was hardened by some process, probably by a slow fire. The body was then placed on a bed of charcoal about 4 feet in height and covered with the same kind of material to a depth of 20 feet or more.
Wow.
Other bodies buried later alongside of the corpse until the mound was 50 to 100 feet in length. In absence of the temples, the sacred fires fed by willows, ash, and maple were kept burning constantly on these mounds amid the orgies of dance and song and other weird worship.
Wow.
There are thousands of these burial mounds in Oregon, says Dr. Horner, which by their great number convince us that the fire worshippers were very numerous and the condition of the mounds indicates that this form of worship was practiced here so long ago that the period of time which has elapsed since then seems incredible.
Mm.
I mean, that's a lot of information.
Yeah.
You know,
man.
We don't hear anything like that. You know,
I had no today. Clue. I had no clue there was this.
Me neither. That they're only 15 miles from where I live. You know, and here it talks about where they're at. He says that this is the historic mound map due. So apparently there's a mound map somewhere. And it says recent exploration in Oregon made by Chicago Packers. It says Oregon Agricultural College in Corvallis on June 26th, Professor J.B. Horner is preparing a map locating the prehistoric mounds of Oregon. This is being done partly as a result of the recent exploration of the prehistoric burial grounds on the Kalapuya by summer school students. Carlton B. Swift, a Chicago Packer, accompanied by B.G. White of Portland, Ralph R. Cronice, editor of the Albany Democrat, and Professor Horner visited the prehistoric ruins a few days ago. Two additional mounds were discovered on the Osborne Farm, which makes approximately 30 mounds along the banks of the Kalapuya, and half as many others on streams nearby, which have been found by explorers. So, I mean, that's right there. I mean, they're talking about, you know, all these different things that they found.
We got to go exploring, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it talks about that they found bones. I mean, here's Horner again. He says, what was thought to be the bone from the Armachad was excavated from the mound near Tangent recently. More than 50 students and townspeople under the direction of J.B. Horner, professor of history, left the mines building on the annual summer session excursion, the prehistoric mound. So there's mines there. I mean, these were...
Wow.
You know,
what type of, like gold mines or copper mines?
Well, no, they were excavating them. So they dug these mines.
I see.
So that was there because in the papers, he reports that he takes students there every year, several times during the year. And it says the first stop was the Hill Museum in Albany. And Professor Horner pointed out interesting stones and flat-headed prehistoric skulls, which had been taken from the mounds. A hurried inspection of many more relics in the Crawford Museum was made. So apparently there's a place called the Crawford Museum.
Yeah.
Which, again, I need to go see that. And the next stop was for a picnic lunch and a social half hour under the walnut trees. Two shovels were procured, and the party proceeded to the Blevins Mound. So they're naming them. I mean, there must be a map somewhere of these mounds, whether or not we could get access to it. I don't know. And then then later it says the skulls were declared ancient. Professor Horner explained the customs and worships of the ancient people and the probable age of the mounds. Then the shovels were industriously piled or plied by the men of the parody. Several bits of bone, charcoal, and ashes were unearthed. The party returned to Corvallis at 2:30. So, I mean, they just went on, you know, day trips, and they're pulling up bones.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
man, that has me excited to actually really do some more investigation into this stuff. We'll have to have a follow up to this and on site investigation.
Yeah, I mean, it says that. I mean, there's pictures. Here's a picture of Horner digging in a mound right here. It says that they offered human sacrifices. Here's pictures of five different skulls.
And what happened to all these bones? That's what I don't get.
Yeah, exactly. it's just, you know, it goes on and on and on. And here we are, just one little piece of the country, one little state, and all these things in a place that really... most of the ancient things have been buried in Oregon because of the humongous floods that took place several thousand years ago. That's why there's so much rock and aggregate. If there was ancient things, the really ancient things are actually been destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, yeah, you know. And, you know, the other thing you want to bring up is we reported a story about another incident along the Salmon River where there was a pirate treasure apparently, and they found a giant skeleton of apparently a black guy, And this story is actually related to something that's called the Beeswax Ship, which is a pretty interesting story.
And this is that story you told about the canoe or the flying canoe.
Yeah. It was an old Indian legend that there was this canoe that had gone ashore, took a chest and buried it somewhere. And then they guarded that chest with a couple of guys. And then 40 people went off to the east somewhere, but never came back, and their ship just wrecked. And that ship apparently could be seen all the way into the 1970s. And these newspaper stories talk about it, but they call it the Beeswax Ship because apparently beeswax washed up on the Oregon shore for 400 years from a shipwreck that happened in 1600. It was a Spanish ship that carried thousands of pounds of beeswax for candle making.
Wow.
So all this wax has even washed up all the way up into the 1970s, and some of the wax has hieroglyphics on it, and even there's even some hieroglyphic stone. So I think some who knows what these hieroglyphics are about, but it just goes on and on. I mean, here's and you can find pictures of all these different things. So of this shipwreck that. They found a cannon as well in that area. So
they were harvesting beeswax and melting it down into larger bricks for transport and trade.
Yeah, it was on the Halem Bay. And again, there's lots of Indians that lived along the Oregon coast. I mean, just lots and lots. And there's actually rocks. They're called the hieroglyphic rocks of Ni-Ka-Nia. And that's N-E-H, N-A-H, or K-A-H-N-I-E. And again, these are photographs by, again, J.B. Horner, 1922. And these were part of the wrecked ship, apparently. The story goes that these hieroglyphics were left by the people whose ship got wrecked. And these were to kind of show the way to the treasure. Or whatever they buried. And so it could be that there's kind of two stories that kind of got melded together. There may have been an earlier shipwreck of a vessel, a Spanish vessel that had this huge shipment of wax. And then there may have also been another shipwreck that had some kind of a treasure of some sort, or it could have been the same one. Maybe just wax. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can find pictures of this wax even today, and it's on display in museums and different places in Oregon. So a lot of interesting things when you dig. You know, that's the thing about, you know, we're in an age of the internet. You think you can just, you know, click Google and find out anything. Well, you know, these things aren't on Google yet. You've got to somebody's got to put them on there and decipher them and read them before you know, they become part of the World Wide Web.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think people think all the time, I've got the world at my fingertips, and that's an illusion. You've got whatever people have posted on the internet at your fingertips, you know, which is a very, 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 very small percentage of the information there is to know.
Oh, yeah, yep. Yeah, I mean, there's so much information. We just gave little snippets, but, you know, I've got PDFs of these entire newspapers now. I mean, it would take me a long time just to read all these articles.
Yeah.
But there's some really interesting things, but that's what I may do, especially with the mounds. I would love to go out and find some information about these mounds that are near me.
Well, I'd like to put a call out, too, for all the listeners. You know, everybody, for whoever's in their own state, if each one of us, you know, in your own home state, do the same thing. Go on and investigate your specific home state and send us some of the coolest, interesting stories. And we'll try to, like, maybe read a couple of those on air on our follow-up if we get some good information sent to us.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, especially if it has pictures. We've got some things that have pictures on it, and we could, you know, post some of these pictures up there too. There's some really interesting things from, you know, 100-year-old newspapers.
Yeah, and not just go online and look up your local newspaper, but go to your local library, because there's actually oftentimes journals and documents that were archived, and that's where they store a lot of those things. Like if somebody was doing excavations in a local area or a scientist in a local area, oftentimes that stuff will be donated to a local library, and you can go in there and find the archival journal of somebody who was an archaeologist, you know, from the 17, 1800s, and read his specific notes and be the first person to discover some of this stuff. So it's just a matter of going out there and actually doing it. And not everybody has gone out to every single library in every town of every state. So there's a lot of information still to be gathered.
Oh, yeah. And just to kind of show you what I did, I just did it again. All I did, I went to Google, I typed in Oregon newspaper archives, and the first five sites are all from University of Oregon, and it's oregonnews.uoregon.edu. And if I go on that, I can do a search. I can do a search for newspaper pages. I can type in anything I want. You know, I could type in whatever, and it'll look it up for me, and it'll show all the different newspapers that have those keywords in them. And then I can start looking through all the different newspapers and see if I can find interesting things.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, you see the pictures, you can see all kinds of stuff, and, you know, just real interesting things. There's actually real interesting things about when I was digging through it. Some of the giant things were about the circuses, like you said, the freak shows. That was a big hit at that time, was, you know, going to the circus and having the bearded woman and the, you know, the little, sure, little guy and all those different things like, yeah, that. So, and I'm sure it's the same way for any other state. If you put in Idaho,
oh,
or
absolutely,
Missouri or Florida, you could probably find the same thing with, here it is. Here's the archive collection of Idaho Historical Society. I found it just doing a Google search right here. So, and you could search some of these things, but they're not, the Google bots can't find the information. You actually have to read some of it, because a lot of it isn't digitized.
Yeah.
So it's in a form that Google bots can't read.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and like you said, as well, you know, some of the stuff is so blurry or so, you know, dark, you know, even if it did have the technology, it may actually skip over certain things, or there may be, you know, clippings or newspapers or archives that weren't public record that were never put into microfilm or into the digital database.
Oh yeah, yep, exactly. So it's kind of a new, you know, a new way of thinking on finding information, but I think it's kind of where some of us are at. You know, if you want to find more information, that's probably what you have to do, is you've got to dig deeper, like our name says.
Yep, dig for the truth.
Yep.
It's amazing the information there is to find when you're willing just to do a little bit of research. And
yep.
And I know what I'm going to be doing for the next couple days in my free time. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, like, we'd like to hear from you guys and listeners and what you find out. Go and do a little bit of research into the archives. Go to the libraries. Look into the physical, tangible data that other people don't have access to. You know, do the online stuff, but then for a moment, forget that there's such a thing as online. How would you research? You know, where would you go? Are there, you know, libraries or county archives or courthouses or even old people that you know that you could talk to that could have information to lead you in the right direction? You know, those are sorely untapped reservoirs of information that it will be lost, you know, if we don't do the digging. So,
oh yeah. Yep. Well, excellent. So glad we're able to do another podcast. And again, hopefully our listeners will give some feedback and kind of let us know what they'd like us to dig into next.
Yep, absolutely. I know that I was talking to you earlier one of the things that I think would be a fascinating podcast, I know, you know, each of us have had our own kind of different journeys, but one of the things that we both experienced growing up was a series of satanic cat killings where we actually found dismembered and ritually sacrificed animals in an area that was a hotbed for satanic activity. It was an old canal that carried water through a big tube, and this was a place where people would go and kids would drink or hang out or whatever, and it was not far from where we grew up. From our house, we were the closest house to it.
Oh yeah.
And we've got a very interesting account of what we found one time, and I think we'll do a podcast on that sometime where we'll tell our story. I'd actually, because we actually had to call the police. We had the sheriff's department come out and do some investigation and took photographs and took some of the actual evidence of altars.
Oh, yeah.
Ritualistic writings and paraphernalia that was left behind. So we can talk more about that. I think our listeners might find that kind of fascinating. So in the meantime, I'm going to maybe even call. I know a guy that works down at the sheriff's office and see how far they can go back if he has the archives on that at all.
Yeah.
Probably not. But
yep, that would be interesting.
But that's one of those things, again, if you do your local research, if you ask around, you'd be amazed at how much goes on in the unknown areas, you know. Anyway, do your research, people. You know, dig deep and look locally where you're at. You know, God's put you in the place you're at for a reason, and we'd like to hear back from you and what you find out. And Neo is great, great podcast. You had some great information there. And
oh yeah, it was great. So hey, have a good one, and everybody take care until our next one.
Till next time. All right.
All right.
All right. God bless.
Thanks.
Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What? Original. Are you original? There's only one original. Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What? Original. Are you original?
Archaeologic in the booth, and I'm digging for the truth. Do these fossil specimens extinct like saber tooth? My specialty consists in the study of anomalies, obscure archaeology of ancient societies, who studied nature's geometries, made charts of stars called astronomy. This ingenuity repeated through history. Look at the Baghdad battery, the rudimentary, it produced electricity. To electroplate metalworks and jewelry that adorn and enhance women's beauty. They had advanced technologies, astronomical astronomers without even the use of binoculars, architects and philosophers. Check the accuracy of the Mayan calendar, the library vaults of Alexandria, and all the grandeur and power of Rome, and the Sphinx and the pyramids hewn out of stone.
Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What? Original. Are you original? There's only one original. Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What? Original. Are you original? There's only one original.
Look at the feats and the wisdom of the ancients. Sky-watching astronaut like calculations for demonstration of incredible inventions. I'll mention the Antikythera mechanism, an instrument of precision, a remnant remains with fragmented inscriptions that help navigations and sea explorations, just as ambitious as our expeditions. Machines and mechanical robots, ingenious, exquisite devices like steam-powered engines existed before modern man had the vision, repeated and lost in historic revisions. Witness Archimedes' screw still twisting. Pumped water from the Nile like Egyptians. Evidence of master mathematicians, magicians who put David Blaine out of business. Blacksmiths and masons, artistic expressions with tools and techniques that surpass expectations.
Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What? Original. Are you original? There's only one original. Nothing's new under the sun. Whatever we do, it's already been done. What's original? Are you original? There's only one original.
Mysteries, mysteries lost. to obscurity. Certainly interesting secret discoveries, curious pieces, relics, antiquities, mummies whose wrappings are sacred and seen in museums. So we can interpret, investigate various theories, mysterious cities, arrangements of megalith monuments, tablets and documents burned by Theophilus, philosophies, prophecies of apocalypse, opulent palaces, golden sarcophagus haunted by jackals, deserted metropolis, biblical evidence, old and New Testaments, ecclesiastical patterns are evidence. Solomon said it, I only repeat it, that everything seemingly meaningless, cycles repeating the seasons, repeatedly colored in yellow and crimson, encrypted inscriptions, incredible visions that influence human decisions.